Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzio, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good today. How you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. In the new studio, we're working at the Kinks, but we're also very honored that our guest decided to come back for a second round. He is the author of The War of Art and Turning Pro, or as Gino likes to call it, Casamiento. The rice and beans of overcoming resistance to live a creative and productive life. So without further ado, Stephen Pressfield, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here, Jake and Gino.
So I've got another food analogy for you, Stephen. I'm Italian. Italians look at everything in life through food. We've got Thanksgiving. This is the turkey right here, everybody. These are the mashed potatoes. This right here are the sweet potatoes.
For the folks not on YouTube, he's holding up all,
Stephen's books right now. So I got The War of Art. I've got Turning Pro. Do the work. The artist journey right here. Maybe some stuffing, some cranberry sauce, or as I get a little older, maybe some quinoa that day, but we'll leave it at that. And the gates of fire. Ultimately, this is the apple pie right here. This is the dessert. So for us, it's been an honor to read all these books. And for me on the journey, it's just, they're not hard to read, but they're so in depth. And it really gets into the crux of when you're stuck out there, the resistance, it's real and people don't know how to explain it. It sits there all the time and it does hold you back. And if you can't put a word to it and you can't explain it, it just gnaws at you. Like it gnawed at me this morning. And man, reading these books to me has been life-changing. So I want to share this with everybody out there, Stephen.
Gino, I'm just curious. You were talking about resistance with a capital R. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Gnawing at you this morning. I'm just curious, like what form did it take? What kind of were your symptoms?
Honestly, I was pissed off. And
he was acting like a baby. He was throwing a temper tantrum.
With a capital B. You know why? Because I want something to be perfect. And thank God my wife is sitting next to me here. So she helps me with the resistance. I got my partner here who helps me with the resistance. But for me, the problem is that I don't want to let my team down. I want everything to be really good and I don't want to let my team down. So I put extra effort into it. I prepare for things really well, which helps me kill the resistance. And it just sat there and it was just gnawing at me because I know it's not perfect. I know I can do better, but it's not going to stop me. I'm going to continue to blast through it. Like Jake said, we'll figure out the studio. It'll get better. The lighting will get better. The picture in the back will get better. But I'm old enough now where I know it's there and it's not going to stop me, Steven. Does that make sense?
So the resistance then, Gino, was to podcasting in the new studio. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's sort of a performance anxiety, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, nothing was working. And it didn't look the way we wanted it to. So everything was just, we needed more reps in order to fine tune it. We're not there yet. Mm-hmm.
I think you're close. You look great. You guys look great.
Yeah, it's the makeup, Stephen. So before we get this kicked off, Stephen, in case some folks missed our last episode with you, do you mind just giving a very brief summary of your background leading up to your writing success?
The quick version is that it took me 28 years from the time I quit a job, which was in advertising in New York City, to try to write till I got my first novel published. And I worked a lot of different crazy jobs during that time. And a lot of what was holding me back was my own resistance with a capital R, my own self-sabotaging behavior as far as being able to, access my talent and believe in it and become a professional and actually do it. So I've been trying to write for about 50 years and have actually been professionally writing for maybe 25.
So when you said 25 years professionally, where was the switch when you went professionally? What was that like for you?
I would say when I say 20 professionally, actually, I was writing professionally before that. But I would say when I first, like with the book you held up, Gates of Fire, mm-hmm. and the one that came before that, The Legend of Bagger Vance, meaning that I professionally that I actually wrote something that got published and was a success.
Love that. And what triggered you? Because in the book, you say it was that year you're working that you became a professional. Can you describe that for people? Because I'll share my story after you share yours. And just the whole idea of, oh, wow, now I'm a professional. I'm not an amateur. Amateur means to love in Latin. So all of a sudden that switch goes on. You become a professional.
Okay. If you promise to tell your story, Gino, because I want to hear this.
I will.
Mine was that maybe 8 or 9 or 10 years, I was trying to write and I could never finish anything. I would always choke right at the finish line. And at one point, I saved up enough money that I could live for a couple of years, which this was far enough in the past that that amount of money was $2,700 mm-hmm. that I could live for 2 years on, which I did. And I rented a little house in a little town in Northern California. And I just sat down and I had a book I wanted to write. And I said, I'm going to finish this book, because finishing was my big bugaboo, or hang myself, you know? And for that period, I had like no TV, I had no radio, I had no stereo, I basically had no friends. I just was isolated working on this book, and I would write all day and read, you know, when I was done, all the stuff you promise yourself you'd read in college, but you never do. Mm-hmm. The Brothers Karamazov, War and Peace, you know, Fathers and Sons, all that sort of stuff. And during that time, you know, when you work on a concentrated level, day after day after day, energy starts to concentrate around you and you get into a state of mind. It's not like an altered state, but you're so focused. And I was so driven to do this that, I mean, that was really when I became really, in my own mind, I became a pro. I had not succeeded yet. The book that I finished during that time couldn't get published. And the one after that didn't get published either. But in my own mind, I said to myself, you know, I've done it. I'm not an amateur. I'm not a dilettante. I'm a full-time pro.
I love that. For me, Stephen, it's 2008. And the Great Recession is looming. And I'm reading the book, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. And I remember reading the book and I got really pissed off at T. Harv. Don't know why. It's just a book. He wrote it. I'm taking it myself. And I'm saying to myself, this whole responsibility thing. And then it clicked. And I'm like, he's right. Everything in this book, your fruits are your roots. I decided to invest an exorbitant amount of money for me at the time to start mentoring and learning real estate. And I had met Jake. So I'm working at it for a year and then I'm starting to invest. And I hear everyone around me say, you know, life is not all about work. My mom would be working at the restaurant. I'd be sitting down during lunch, banging out, reading books and listening to podcasts and doing my work. And everyone's saying life is not all about. And to me, I was just oblivious to that. I just was just driven to learn as much as I possibly could. And then a year later, I meet Jake. And then a couple of years later, and like you said, it doesn't happen overnight. He moves down to Knoxville. We stay in touch and I'm still working really, really hard. But that year of 2008, when the economy went all to hell, and I'm thinking to myself, I really need to find something else. And that for me was the pivotal turning point. And it took 5 years after that for us to close our very first deal. So very similar to you, I can pinpoint that time to everybody out there. So for everybody listening, even though you may not have the success, just go back to think of when you became totally committed to what endeavor you're trying to accomplish. And that's when you turn professional.
That's a great story. Stephen, I'm not sure how to properly pose this question to you. I don't know if it's why or how. So I'm just going to put it out there. Why or how did you keep going as a writer? Because I feel like so many people would have just quit. I mean, how many years again did it take before anything really got picked up for you?
It was really like 28 years.
That's crazy though. Most people would have said, I'm done. But it took 20 years to reach that level of success though. So I don't even know if you could just answer how or why did you keep going?
Well, first of all, it's a great question, Jake. 10 years prior to when I had a novel published, I actually had a career as a screenwriter. Mm-hmm. So I was getting some success, right? I was writing professionally and things were happening. And before that, it was like I would try from time to time to get a straight job, all different kinds, like white collar jobs, blue collar jobs, and sort of say to myself, okay, I'm giving up on this crazy idea of being a writer. Let me get a real job. But I would get so depressed. At the end of the day, I would just have to go home and write. I would have to get out the typewriter and try something, you know? And from time to time, when I would quit a job, let's say I was working in advertising in New York and I'd saved up enough money to go write a book, another book, right, that was going to fail. And my boss, this happened three times, they always were friends. They would call me in. I know you guys know this sort of story. And they'd say, don't be crazy, Steve. You know, you're just throwing your life away. We'll give you a promotion. We'll give you an office. We'll give you a raise. We'll get, you know, stick around. Don't be a maniac, you know? And I would go home and I would say, you know, they're right. I'm just crazy. My family thinks I'm crazy. Everybody thinks, you know, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't like stay there and work at that job. I just had to try it one more time.
It's beautiful.
And so that's kind of the answer. I was too depressed doing anything else other than that. And so I just had to keep going.
Now for Jake and Gino, this is real easy. You say, stay stupid. For us, very easy to stay stupid. What do you mean by that in the book, though, to stay stupid?
This is in, I guess it's in Nobody Wants to Read Your Shit. Is that where this is?
Yes, that's one of my books. Yes.
And what that really means, kind of as a writer, and this applies to entrepreneurialism and everything else. Let's say you have an idea and you want to plunge, and you start to plunge in on it. Mm-hmm. And immediately you're starting to work. You'll get second thoughts. You'll have doubts, self-doubt, you know, and you'll say to yourself, well, you know, the market really isn't that, you know, I'm doing a Western. There hasn't been a successful Western in the last since, you know, Rio Hancho, whatever it is. And in other words, that voice in your head will be sort of a quote unquote smart voice. Mm-hmm. It'll be kind of the conventional wisdom. And my theory is to stay stupid and just ignore that voice, you know, mm-hmm. and follow your own heart. You had an instinct. You wanted to write this thing or make a movie or start this business. I'm sure, Gino, you had that, you know, people where your family was saying to you, this is crazy. You're never going to make any money in real estate. You're a maniac. Why don't you just stay with the restaurant or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But to stay stupid means just sort of trust that instinct, that crazy instinct that says, I love doing this. I want to, you know, I just feel it. Let me go for it. Mm-hmm.
So I just wrote a quote down that popped into my head when you said that greatness is on the other side of your smart voice. Don't listen to the smart voice, because there's a pot of gold at the other end of it, I think, is what I'm hearing.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, Jake. You know, it's like my bosses in advertising who would offer me a job and say, stay around. That was the smart voice, right? That was the smart thing to do. Anybody that had any brains would have done that. Mm-hmm. But if I had done that, I'd have hung myself by now. Oh. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I didn't do it.
So in the book, you say, who is on your side? I want everyone to write these things down. Who is on your side? The first one is the stupidity, not allowing ourselves to think. The second one is being stubborn. The third one is blind faith. The next one is passion. Fear seeps passion. The fifth one is assistance. And the sixth one is friends and family. At one point in your journey, Stephen, you must have dialed in and locked into each one of those, correct?
Oh yeah, constantly. You know, it all sort of goes under the heading of don't listen to that conventional wisdom, smart voice from your own head or from anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're driven by a passion, if you've got something that you love.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, how does a pro ultimately overcome that fear? How did you overcome that fear?
I believe you can never overcome that fear. Face it every day, you know? Mm-hmm. But the only thing is to act in the face of that fear, you know? Mm-hmm. And each day just say, I'm going to keep following my dream. I'm going to do it today. It's a lot like AA, you know, where one of their things is one day at a time. You really do have to sort of take it one day at a time, because just like a recovering alcoholic, every day has the urge to drink, right? Mm-hmm. It never goes away. You know, you and I as entrepreneurs or artists, we have the urge to quit, right? To take some safe way. Mm-hmm. And it happens every day. It's the dragon that you have to slay first thing in the morning and then plunge in and do your work and just keep working.
I love this quote in the book that you have. You say, when we live as amateurs, we're running away from our calling, which is meaning our work, our destiny, the obligation to become our truest and highest selves. The addict is the amateur. The artist is the professional. The difference is their habits. To me, that's really, really a profound statement. Would you want to expand on that a little bit for us?
There's a lot in there. I didn't even realize I'm hearing it. I mean, one of the things that I talk a little bit in, I'm not sure even which book that is, but about addiction. And that when we're running away from doing our dream, from following our calling, whatever it is, a lot of times we'll fall into kind of what I would call shadow activities. You know, one of the things I talk about is a shadow career. We'll get a job that is adjacent to our dream job, but is not our dream job, but is a lot safer. Like sometimes people will work as assistants to a creative person or an entrepreneur or whatever, when they themselves want to be entrepreneurs or want to be artists, you know, but they think to themselves, well, I just don't have what it takes. Let me just be an assistant. And another kind of example of that is Hollywood, in the movie business, they have entertainment lawyers, big entertainment law firms that will represent directors and writers and actors and so on and so forth. And if you talk to a lot of these lawyers, they want to be writers. They want to be filmmakers. They want to be directors. but they have sort of chosen this career, the law, particularly entertainment law, that's like adjacent to making movies, but it's not making movies. And some of them will actually start to write. And I got Ron Bass. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, who wrote Rain Man and a bunch of other things. He was a big time lawyer. He just said, hey, I love to write. I'm going to write. I don't care. You know,
good for him.
So that's kind of a shadow career. But another shadow activity is addiction, where what happens is if we have a dream inside us, right, and we don't act on it, that energy doesn't go away. It goes into another channel. And a lot of times it goes into a negative channel. And a lot of times that channel is some form of addiction, some sort of just we can't control. And if you look at the life that an addict lives, is a lot like the novel that that addict would like to write, if you know what I mean, or the movie. Yes. Or mm-hmm. It becomes a person who kind of veers into addiction creates drama in their own life. That's sort of their shadow work of art. And it is a work of art because it's really fascinating. You know, there's people go to jail, they get in fist fights, you know, they have crazy love affairs, they get thrown out of their house. All kinds of drama happens mm-hmm. when, at least I'm not a doctor, but this is my theory.
Yeah.
That if they would face their dream, whatever it is, to be a musician, to be an artist, to be whatever it is, the need to be an addict goes away. Because now you're actually enacting your dream instead of letting that energy channel itself into a negative channel.
Stephen, do you think these people actually realize what their dreams are? I mean, is it their subconscious? Do you think they're even aware of what their thoughts are? Do you think, like, they become a lawyer, but do you think they even know that they want to get into acting, but they're in legal?
I do. You know, I think we had like five people here in the studio with you guys, right? Let's say, mm-hmm. and you sort of forced them and said, in 2 seconds, tell me your dream. First thing off the top of your head, the people would be able to do it. They'd say, I always wanted to be a rock star, you know, or I wanted to be a cowboy. We sort of know it, but I think what happens is as soon as that dream pops into our head, second voice comes in and says, oh, that's crazy. You'll never be able to do that. You do that, forget it, you know, mm-hmm. be an astronaut, forget it, you know? So we sort of push that dream down, you know? And we've doubted it so many times. But I do think that people do know what they're, at least in a general area, they sort of know, I want to do something that helps people. You know, I want to do something that, you know, would help the environment or would, you know, whatever. Or maybe they just say, I just want to be rich. That's valid too.
Yes. So what I want everyone to do is just stop for a second. Everyone who's listening to this, stop for a second and think real quick. What is your dream? What do you want to do? And if you feel resistance towards it, go out and buy the book, The War of Art. Start with the turkey right here, because this is a really important book, because resistance is going to pop up. It's supposed to pop up, because if it doesn't pop up, then it doesn't really mean anything to you. And that's really, really important. I'll give you an example for myself. We just started taking opera lessons with the kids. So I'm singing an opera right now. And I didn't think it would be that big of a deal. I didn't think I would like it that much, to be honest with you. I didn't know I was a dramatic tenor. I didn't think I had a great voice, but my teacher is telling me I'm really good. And now it's a little nerve-wracking. Now, every time I go into the studio to perform, there's a little resistance there. And whenever I get up in front of people, there's resistance there. So that means that I'm supposed to do it. That it actually means something to me. So everybody out there, if you have a dream, you're supposed to have resistance. It means something to you, which is really important. You do want to expand on that, Stephen?
First of all, I got to congratulate you, Gino, on doing that. I think that's fantastic. You know, you got a great name for a tenor. You know,
yes, I do. Better name than better voice, but it's okay.
You know, one of the analogies that I use, I might even have said this the last time we did our little show together, was that I think of the dream, like you being a tenor, let's say, or whatever it is, mm-hmm. is like a tree in the middle of a sunny meadow. And the instant that the tree appears, a shadow appears, right? The tree casts a shadow, mm-hmm. and that shadow is resistance. So it's almost like Newton's third law of motion. You know, everything produces an equal and opposite reaction, right? In space mm-hmm. or whatever it is. As soon as we have a dream of some kind, immediately the shadow, its shadow will appear. But the good news is the dream always comes first. There would be no resistance if there wasn't a dream. And in fact, when we find ourselves experiencing massive resistance, it's good news because it shows that the tree is really big. Mm-hmm. If it's a big shadow, there's a big tree. And that means if we can only make ourselves follow that dream and live it out, then there's great things on the other side of that.
We're jumping through all of the books. I know everybody. I'm just excited because I think they all have just great little nuggets of wisdom in all of them. The one we just mentioned before was Turning Pro. That's the one with the addict and the one in the professional. Now, when I read that quote off to you, the addict is the amateur, the artist is the professional. The difference is their habits. And I love the qualities of the professional you have. And that story, everybody, he's got the story in the book of pulling the pin when he was working on the railroad. You know, the amateur pulls the pin and he's gone. And some of these qualities, I'll read them off and then I want Stephen to comment and really discuss them because it's important. The professional, their habits, they show up every day. They're long-term. They're patient. They seek order. They act in the face of fear. There's no excuses. Doesn't show up. Helps others. Sheds ego. Dedicates to mastering technique and defers gratification. Those are a lot of really difficult habits, but those are the habits that embody professional, right, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, a lot of times what keeps us from achieving our dream or from even starting on it is that we are thinking like amateurs. Mm-hmm. And we don't even know it. We have no clue. Now, an amateur, the habits of an amateur are something like this. When an amateur encounters adversity, an amateur quits. An amateur does not show up every day mm-hmm. to do whatever their dream is. Mm-hmm. And when they do show up, they don't stay there all day. Mm-hmm. When amateur yields to distraction, whether it's social media or drama within the family or whatever it is, an amateur yields to that. When I think of professionals, I think of like Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or Tom Brady, somebody like that. You know, those guys, they know how to play hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing stops them, you know? Mm-hmm. They're the first guy into the gym in the morning. They're the last guy that leaves. And if adversity strikes them, like so many famous games that Michael Jordan, when he had the flu, or Kobe Bryant, you know, they play through it. And not only do they play through it, but they have the greatest game they ever had, you know, mm-hmm. whereas an amateur has the habits of just caving in when adversity strikes mm-hmm. and not thinking of themselves as somebody that's got to show up for the whistle every day. So I always say amateurs have amateur habits and professionals have professional habits. And if we want to get ahead in anything, you know, we have to train ourselves and teach ourselves to have the habits of a professional.
Stephen, I'm almost seeing a ladder here where resistance is the first step and it's part of a mindset and it's part of things that come into your life that will just shut you down immediately. And I feel like it's almost the first step, but is resistance different than the struggle that may follow the resistance? I almost feel like the first step is resistance, then struggle comes into it. And then you almost have to have a long-term mindset during the struggle to really get to those positive results. Is that fair to say?
That's a great question, Jake. And I can see your mind. You have a visual.
I'm always thinking.
You're not musical like Gino, but you're
not even close, but I got to work on it. I'm open to it. I want to be.
I do think you're absolutely right that resistance is the first step. It's sort of like diving into a cold, icy pool.
Yeah.
Right. The first, let's say you're training for a triathlon, for the Ironman, and you're swimming in the ocean and you're training. The resistance will strike you while you're on the beach going, oh my God, I don't want to get into that cold, cold water, you know? But once you plunge in and you're in the water, then you're past resistance. You're in there, but like you say, Jake, you still got to work. Now you have to train. Now you have a lot other adversity of the waves and the current and being tired and all that sort of stuff. But that's a kind of adversity or obstacle that we can all overcome once we're in the flow, you know? Mm-hmm. It's what keeps us stuck on the beach. That's what really kills us. Once we're in the water, you know, we can keep going.
So Jake and I last night went out with the wives. It was Valentine's Day. And this is for all the parents out there, because this is very important. My son was working at the restaurant. He's a busboy. He's 19 years old. And one thing that maybe you can comment on this as well as what we as parents can do for our children. But I want him to work his ass off. I want him to suffer at work. I want him to struggle. So when the resistance does come in his life, he'll be able to back it up with hard work. A lot of people are given things and we can live a plush life and all, and I can do that with my children. They do have the finer things in life, but I want them to work really hard because I know when things get tough, I don't want them to quit. I don't want the adversity to say, oh, done. I've worked hard before. I've built up that muscle because when I worked at the restaurant for 30 plus years, it was hard work getting yelled at, you know, 100 degrees out. And Stephen, I see your story as well. You've done a lot of very difficult, demanding jobs and you've built that muscle of hard work. So if you have resistance and you get over the resistance, that hard work comes, you're not going to quit. So what can we as parents do for our children other than instilling that hard work ethic and letting them know that it's there, but with that hard work, you can help overcome that?
I mean, that's a tricky one. And I don't have any kids, so I can't speak from experience, but I think what you're doing, Gino, is the right thing, you know, but I know it's tough because a lot of times if you have a certain degree of affluence, it's like your kids know, hey, it's only dad that's stopping me. You know, it's not like it's the depression and you're working all week for an apple, you know, but somehow as a parent, you know, who's a great guy on this subject, you know, who Joe DeCina is?
I've heard of the name.
He's the guy who founded the Spartan race. I'll spell his last name. It's DeSena, Joe DeCina. And he just wrote a book that's on this exact subject. I'm trying to remember what the title is. I have it around here somewhere. I even wrote a blurb for it, but it's about, I think it's called, the title is Resilience. He's got a family, he's got kids, and he's a hardcore dude, you know? And so he talks in this book about how he's raising his kids. And it's kind of what you're saying, you know, he really pushes them to the max, you know? And when he goes out and runs these incredibly long races, he makes his kids come along with him, you know, and run. So yeah, definitely that muscle needs to be trained.
Let me ask one, I have one more question before you go to the short answers. I love this, these three mantras you have. It says, stay primitive, trust the soup. And I think the third one, swing for the seats. We don't do that enough, do we? People don't swing for the seats. As in your profession, you know, your boss would always say, come back. These copies, these things that you're doing, they're a postage stamp. I need a microscope to see these damn things. And that's what a lot of people are holding back. Is that also resistance telling you to play small?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people like the idea of swing for the seats, I think, is a great mantra to keep in mind. Like a lot of times when friends will come to me and ask, say, you know, I've got a book in me. I want to write a book. I want to try this, you know? And their first thing is they say, well, let me write a short story. You know, let me just do something like that, you know? And I always tell them, don't do that. Go big right from the start. You know, kind of like they say, when you're teaching a kid to play golf, don't have him swing easy at the start. Have them hit it as hard as they possibly can. So they'll just fall on their butt. You know, they swing so hard. And the reason is, once you learn to hit the ball hard, you can always throttle it back, you know? But if you start out hitting it kind of easy, it's really tough to start hitting it hard. So that's one of my mantras too, is go for the bigger idea instead of a small one.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, we're back. Something you said earlier about the smart voice. I'm stuck on this smart voice because I think it plagues so many of us. How do you think the smart voice grows, because I almost think it's a societal thing. Kind of go to school, you're trained to be an employee. Do you think there's more to it, that money doesn't grow on trees, sort of these things that we hear our parents saying? Where do you think that conditioning comes from, and maybe different ways that we can work to avoid that in our lives?
That's a great one, Jake. I think it really is true. Like, if you think about, I'll ask you another, do you guys know who Seth Godin is?
Yes.
G-O-D-I-N, you know, mm-hmm. He's kind of a friend and a mentor to me, and he's a real internet entrepreneur and a lot of things, but he's also an educator, and he is really down on the American education system. And he thinks that the whole thing was sort of put into place to create client factory workers, to create people who will stand in line and wait patiently in line and take their place on the assembly line and do their work, that kind of thing.
You were, you know, a dissident to the factory workers.
Yes. Whereas for you guys, like, to be entrepreneurs, that took sort of breaking out of the shell, right? You really had to sort of overcome this conditioning that.
I'm with you, though. I don't think I had a choice. I think it was just this innate fire that was there that was eventually going to come out at some point. Because I kind of related to you when you were talking about it. It just wasn't going to work for you.
Yeah, but you're right that we're conditioned by that. And I think it's that conditioning is well-intentioned. It's like, you know, my dad grew up in the Depression, you know, and he had a lot of hard times. And his dream for me, as far as education, was that I become an engineer. And I actually signed up for engineering school when I first went to college. And the reason he wanted that for me was he thought, you know, the bottom can drop out of the economy. Things can go totally to hell. Get yourself a job that, you know, there's always going to be a demand for.
They'll always need accountants, mm-hmm. right?
That kind yeah. of thing. And so it's well-intentioned advice. Yeah. But if you have a dream, it's going to kill that dream. Mm-hmm. So that's that smart voice that we
but
have
think
to,
about that advice. They'll always need accountants. They're always going to need X. Fill in the blank. They're always going to need. What does that do for your soul to be, well, they're always going to need you? Mm-hmm. That is, there's such a lack of passion and fulfillment there. If you really kind of strip that down, and I think that's all contributing to that, that smart voice. That's the smart voice speaking there. There's always going to be,
yeah,
fill in the blank.
Smart voice. It's not really smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, these days, people would say something like, well, they're always going to need people who can do work in printing.
Yeah.
And then they invented, you know, the printer and the digital this and that. Now they don't need printers. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon they're not going to need accountants either, because it's all going to be automated and in the software.
Mm-hmm. But what they don't say is you always should chase your dream. You always should find the stuff that lights your soul on fire. We don't hear those things. So
no.
Just because I'm curious, this is a selfish question. How were the $2,700 per years? What was your life like? Did you enjoy them? Were you living a fulfilled life? You're grinding, clearly reading, writing, and seemed to be maybe a little bit of a hermit life there as well. Was it enjoyable? Can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. In fact, I look back on it in many ways, kind of the best years of my life. You know, I lived in a little house that was for $100 a month. You know, I had I had my cat and me. That was it. I had, you know, an old typewriter. I guess you can see that there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just, a lot of times during that period, I thought, I wish everybody could have a couple of years like this in their life. Now, the writer's life, of course, is different than, say, an actor's life. The writer's life is a solitary life. And that suited me, but a period when you can just give yourself over to your dream, whatever it is, you know, and the hard work, like we were talking before, Jake, you know, I was like in the ocean swimming.
Yeah.
Then that's what it really was.
Yeah.
And
struggle. The struggle was real at that point.
You know, the best couple of years of my life in terms of career anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about those years is that you were on the verge the whole time. You didn't taste it yet. You were coming up and grinding, and there was uncertainty, and you never knew. So it had to be, I don't want to be corny, but that had to be a little spicy as well for you, wondering, were you going to make it? but you're working your butt off. It's just, I don't know. I think it's very exciting to just even think about that. So,
well, you guys must have had that exact same feeling, I'm sure, as at the early stages of your real estate career, right?
There was definitely times we weren't sure if this thing was going to connect or not. I remember just silly stuff. We were self-managing our apartments, and we had our first building was very, very rough. And I remember, you know, texting people and trying to get them to pay. Hey, can you meet me at McDonald's to pay the rent? And we were being strung out, and, you know, things were breaking left and right. It was a disaster, but I wouldn't have traded it for the world. We learned a ton, and then it helped really, you know, create the business that we have today. So yeah, I want to trade those years. I don't know if I want to go back and do them again right now, because they were a huge struggle. But
so, Stephen, for me, the issue that how I overcame resistance, and this is something important that everyone should hear, I had an accountability partner. I was accountable to somebody. So it really helped me push through my resistance. And the second thing was, I'm facing my mortality. I'm getting up in age, and I haven't achieve my dreams yet. I haven't become the entrepreneur that I want to become. And then I have my children here who I want to be a role model to. I want them to see dad enjoy work. I don't want them to go have me go to work, come home upset, come home angered, and not feel fulfilled. So that also fueled my way to get over resistance. So I had so many different levers going on at the same time. And I didn't want to make any more excuses. I wanted to at least try. And for you talking about that smart voice, I had my mother in the background who I worked with at the restaurant, the smart one saying, you've got six mouths to feed. You have six children. So you've got six mouths to feed. You can't take a risk. We have to stay small. And I'm sitting there all the time fighting that resistance because I know she means well, but thankfully I had enough, I don't want to call them demons, but I had enough anger inside of me and I had enough passion that I wanted to really do it for myself. But I also wanted to see my children. Now that my children are in the business, they see dad, they come to his events, they're really happy. They're really part of the business. And that's really what I wanted. I wanted a family business where we could help others help, you know, achieve impact. And also really when they look at dad, they go, I want to do what dad does. Cause I never wanted them to think of work as being drudgingly or you have to do it. I wanted them to say, this is what I want to do when I grow up. I don't want to tell them what to do. So that's what really fueled me.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and now you'll be a tenor very soon. Oh, God bless you.
I know I might be losing him. He might be out the door here. I don't know. So, all right. I got a tough one for you. Are you still pro, and do you continue to show up every day and push yourself? And if so, why?
Yes, I absolutely. And I will be
pro for life.
Get me out of here feet first, you know? No, I haven't, you know, burned out or lost any, you know, I still have new ideas coming in every day, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to get them out there, you know, and I want to keep growing, you know, there is an evolution as you go through an artistic career anyway. You know, you've done one thing and you don't want to do it again, and you do another one and it's a little bit different and you want to do something a little bit different and a little bit harder. And so, yeah, definitely I'm evolving. I haven't hung up my spikes yet.
So you connected then, you found what your people say a true north or true calling. And why quit? You could have obviously retired many times over, I'm sure, but you're in a place where you want to be, and you're going to continue to push and grow then. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm, you know, that's the smart voice would say kick back, you know,
yeah,
but I'm not going to listen to that voice.
Ah, I love it. Keep grinding. I absolutely love it. Oh man. I just, you know, I really, really appreciate you coming on and just, you know, sharing your wisdom with us. Is there a best place to go where people can, you know, buy the books, learn more about you? Is there a home base?
I have a website and a blog. That's just my name, stephenpressfield.com. Oh. But you can also find me on Instagram. I do a bunch of videos each week, you know, and just, you know, put in my name, Stephen Pressfield, it'll come up. And I'm on
follower.
Amazon and all those places.
Excellent. Awesome. Excellent. All right. You ready to take us home here?
I'm going to recap this really quick. I'm here to sell some books unabashedly. First one is The War of Art. Just start with The War of Art. It is an amazing book. It seems like it's a real easy read, but once you dive into it, it's going to hit you right in the heart, because you're going to say to yourself, if you're not living up to your dream or you're not living up to your potential, it's going to really affect you. And you're going to say, this is great. Where do I go next? The next one is Turning Pro. This was an awesome book. And, you know, I've got a bunch of notes in here. This talks about the qualities of a professional. It talks about being addicted to failure, pulling the pin. There's some amazing stories. Do the work. This is simple. I want my son to do the work, do the bus job, do the hard work. This is what leads to success. Artist's Journey. Now, this is an awesome book. This is just like the first one. There's so many golden nuggets in this book. And finally, one that I have right here, The Gates of Fire. This is the apple pie. As you can see, I was reading this in the hot tub, but one of the kids jumped in, got it a little bit wet. I haven't finished reading it. That's yet.
That's the good stuff right there.
This is the one, as you can see, this is the one that I'm putting off because this is not for my personal development. The smart voice is telling me to read this, but the stupid voice is telling me to continue to dive into Stephen's books where I can work on my personal development and I can overcome resistance. And like I said, once again, everybody, stop and take a second, 2 seconds, and think about where your dreams are. What do you want to do right away? Bam. And if you know it and you're not pursuing it, let's start off with the war of art and let's start out how we can overcome our resistance.
Stephen, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming back on.
Hey, great. Thanks, Jake. Thanks, Gino. You know, bring me back anytime. It's fun to talk to you guys. You're a great bunch of guys.
Thanks.
Take care.
All right. And that tenor stuff, I'm so great. That's the most exciting thing I've heard today, Gino. God bless you.
Thank you, Stephen. Take care, everybody.